friends. This is Christine Hoover from gracecoversme.com, and I want to welcome you to the By Faith podcast, where each week this season, I'm talking to someone who is walking forward by faith, many through difficult circumstances. We're asking the question, how does God meet us in our deepest, darkest pain, and how does He turn that pain into beauty? This is the theme of my new book, Searching for Spring, which releases next week. I'll tell you more about it at the end of the show, so stick around for that. Today, my guest on the show is Sarah Haggerty. Sarah is the author of Every Bitter Thing is Sweet, and her more recent release is Unseen, The Gift of Being Hidden in a World That Loves to Be Noticed. That subtitle says it all and has been such a necessary book for me personally. Sarah also has one of those Instagram accounts that when you notice she's posted, you stop and read every word. She leads her readers daily to adore God according to His different attributes. You can check her out at Sarah Haggerty Writes, Sarah with no H, and see what I mean. And by the way, anytime I mention a person or a website or a book, like Sarah's book or my new one, Searching for Spring, anytime I mention those in my podcast, I link to those in the show notes. So simply scroll down wherever you're listening and click through to anything you're interested in. After today, you'll definitely be clicking through to find out more about Sarah, because you're going to love our conversation. Sarah is married to Nate, and together they have 6 kids, 4 of whom were adopted after many years of infertility. And then 2 biological gifts came along. I wanted to talk to Sarah about the long view of parenting and how years of infertility taught her to turn to God in hard things and to wait on Him. You may not have children, but I hope that you'll listen anyway, because Sarah shares insights that we all can benefit from as we take the long view in our work, or caring for elderly parents, or in any way we're waiting on God. So friends, here is my chat with Sarah. Thank you, Sarah, for joining me.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on.
I love you and love your writing, and I can't wait for...
The feeling is mutual.
Well, thank you. I'd love for you to introduce first your family. Tell us, you've got a large family, right? So tell us about your kids.
Yeah, I have 6 children. My oldest is 14 and my youngest is 1. And we sort of grew our family outside of the box a little bit. We adopted 2 from Ethiopia, and then 2 years later adopted 2 more from Uganda outside the birth order. So my oldest was in that second batch. And then after 13 years of marriage, had this surprise biological baby and another one a couple years later. So we grew really fast and we're really big and we're still kind of getting our bearings.
Yeah. How long have you and Nate been married to now?
16 and a half years.
16 and a half. And I...
No, 17 and a half.
All the brain
cells... No, 16 and a half.
The brain cells have died with babies, right? Yeah. And you used to live in Charlottesville, Virginia, which is where I live. And yes. I got to meet you at some point. It was very brief. But did you go to UVA?
I didn't. My husband went to UVA.
Okay.
So I moved to Charlottesville after college and met my husband there, and he stayed after college. So we often say moving anywhere from Charlottesville feels like a demotion, because it truly is like one of the most beautiful places in the U.S.
It really is. It really is. We moved here almost 10 years ago now, and I had never heard of it before we moved here. But it is a beautiful place. And I'm glad to call it home now. But now what do you call home now?
I live in Kansas City.
Kansas City. Okay. And y'all have lived there how long now?
About 8 years.
Okay.
So I guess we did overlap in Charlottesville, but just never met while we were physically there, living there.
Right. Right. But I remember the first time I met you was at our friend Claire and Lewis's house. And we were there.
That's right. I had forgotten that. I thought it was actually Claire's funeral, but no, it was for the parenting class.
Yeah. So they led our community group for church and we were in it, and we came that day and you guys were there. And
that's right.
I'm like, oh, I thought y'all were new to Charlottesville, but you were just passing through maybe. And
yeah, we were just visiting.
You did not have any, let's see, maybe three kids, four kids at that point?
I think I was pregnant maybe with Beau. So I probably had four and was pregnant.
Okay. And I just remember everyone was so, your children were so sweet and beautiful and just so kind. And, you know, a lot of kids.
That's sweet.
A lot of kids don't know how to speak to adults, I think, but I remember being so impressed with your children because they spoke to me and shook my hand and were just so, so kind. So that was my first memory of you and your children.
Wow! That's a super sweet encouragement on a Thursday morning at 9:30 when our morning maybe hasn't gone like I thought it would.
Well, good. But you mentioned Claire, our mutual friend who we lost a few years ago. I can't believe it's been 2.5 years since our dear friend Claire died. But that was kind of our common bond is through her. When I met you that day, I don't know if I was writing yet. I know I was writing privately, but I didn't know that you wrote and you liked to write. And
I don't think we talked about it. How funny.
Yeah. So then later on, I find out you're writing this book. Every Bitter Thing is Sweet, right? Is the name?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I read you and I was like, I wish I'd talked to her more that day because
I love her.
So but here we are talking today. And I really am excited to talk to you because primarily the topic of your second book, which is called Unseen. You talk a lot about how most of our life we live in an unseen place, that we're doing the mundane things, we're raising children or we're going to a job, and it's just kind of routine, right? And the main thing I wanted to get your perspective on today is parenting, because I think a lot of parenting is just that unseen, does this even matter kind of work. Right?
Yes.
So can you talk to us some about that? Talk to us about the unseenness in parenting.
Well, I think, you know, we have the opportunity now with social media to make some of our unseen moments more seen, to tell the story of our parenting in such a way that because of that opportunity, at times, I think we even feel the ache of the hiddenness of parenting even more. Yeah. Because we wouldn't, maybe 10, 15 years ago, we wouldn't have necessarily been aware of what 3 a.m. felt like with a sick child and knowing that we had to get up the next day and do it all over again. There was kind of no reprieve for the mom. But because nowadays we can tell people about it, we actually look a little bit more at our hidden moments with an ache, like, oh, am I supposed to be hidden? Shouldn't I just tell people? Maybe I'll feel a little bit of relief if somebody knew this pain. I mean, I think that's common among women in general. Like we feel the ache of not having certain parts of our lives known, and we were made to be known. We know that. Psalm 139, you know, he made us in the secret places. He formed us in our mother's womb, Psalm 139:13. And so we feel this ache to be known, and yet we don't quite know what to do with the times in our life when we're not known. And I think motherhood tends to highlight that because there's so many parts of our day that nobody sees where we're really pouring out.
Yeah, I've never thought of it like that before, but you're right. I think social media exacerbates. Maybe we feel like we should be known in every moment. We should be seen in every moment.
And if we're not, is something wrong? You know, rather than sitting in the ache of, I want to be known, there is one creator who can know every part of me. We sort of jump to an easier solution, which is maybe if more people saw what it felt like at this house at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I'd feel some relief.
Yeah.
When the real relief is his eyes.
Yeah. I learned that when I was going through some suffering where I found myself kind of bitter that nobody else around me could, I would say I thought that they weren't trying to understand, but in reality, the truth was they couldn't understand. And I was expecting them to enter into something that they couldn't actually enter into. And I remember reading a Proverbs that said, I can't remember, I'm not going to be able to quote it, but basically that only God can see those things and understand us fully. And
yes.
And that's really, that's enough. That's enough that God can see and know that fully, even though others can't.
Yes. And I think for me, you know, I'm thinking of, so our introduction into parenthood was through adoption. Our first days of being parents were in a guest home in Ethiopia with two children who were 1 and 3 that we'd never met before. And all of a sudden our first words to them are, you can call me mommy, you can call me daddy. It was very unconventional.
Yeah.
And so I remember vividly holding one of my children in the guest home for long hours, because it's traumatic for a child to all of a sudden, you know, we think of the beautiful sides of those stories where we see they have a home, they have a family. It's terribly traumatic for a child to all of a sudden be foisted into someone's arms that they don't know, who is now their permanent caregiver. Right. And my child is just unraveling. And I'm thinking to myself, this is like none of my friends have experienced this. How could I even explain to them what my first day as a mom was like?
Yeah.
But yet now I look at my other friends who have biological children, and many of them felt the same thing in their first days in a hospital room holding this baby that they didn't quite know how to care for. And I think it, in a sense, it's purposed. You know, the Lord allows these, what we might call isolated or alienated opportunities or situations where we feel alone and misunderstood and like we couldn't possibly come up with words to explain it. I think to invite us to say, God, how do you see me here?
Yeah. So how does God meet us in those unseen moments?
I mean, I think it's different for each person. I know for me, in a hiddenness of not just adoption, but I would say in my infertility,
yeah,
you know, going to baby showers and hearing women telling their birthing stories and feeling so distant from that and wanting to crawl under the rug or just get out of the room as quick as possible, but also feeling envious, you know, they've got what I don't have. That is really when I started to engage with the word in a different way.
Yeah.
I started to see the person behind the word. It was less learning the word to study it for a Bible study or to understand the context and more. I mean, for me, it was the Psalms, diving into the emotions of the psalmist and how they dialogued with the Lord from their pain.
Yeah, for sure. Can you tell us a little bit? We've mentioned infertility, but can you tell us more about that experience for you?
Yeah, my husband and I, early on in our marriage, we actually lived with a family in Charlottesville, of course, on a horse farm. Isn't that Charlottesville? Well, a farm.
Yes.
They did have horses. It wasn't necessarily a horse farm, but while our house was being built and they had adopted. And so we were watching their lives with this kind of melded family, some biological children and some children who were adopted. And both of us kind of going, we think we're going to adopt.
Yeah.
But this was real early in our marriage. And so naturally we thought, you know, we're going to choose to when we want to have kids and we'll have kids. Like we have this plan and doesn't it just unfold? And then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years later, we started to realize something isn't working here. And so infertility for us went on for a long time. I think it was 13 years into our marriage. I have to do some math here. Yeah, 12 years into our marriage actually is when we conceived Beau. But so we had always wanted to adopt. It wasn't a plan B for us, but yet at the same time, it was a deep wrestle for me to feel like my body was made to birth children. And here I am unable to do that. And who are you, God? And I'm watching my friends from the outside, their lives seem to be unfolding as planned. So what is it that's kept me in the waiting room and why can't I get out of this room?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm wondering how that translates to parenting now. You have 6 children. You have mm-hmm. 2 biological children, 4 adopted. And also I don't know if listeners caught the fact that you adopted some of your children. They were older when you adopted them. And so that's a whole nother ball of wax with adoption and
death.
But I'm wondering how that waiting period of infertility and you're really learning to walk with the Lord and depend on Him in that unseen longing, unseen by others maybe, or unfelt fully by others. Mm-hmm. How does that translate into what you're doing now? Because now you're mothering 6 kids, you're homeschooling them. Your life is so full now of children. But there's still that that routine and that mundane work, and there's a sense of waiting in parenting, of waiting on fruit to be born in our children that we're trying to cultivate, and we're trying to disciple them and teach them. But a lot of that crop grows up later. And so I'm wondering mm-hmm. how that time of infertility and what you learned there, how that has translated into mothering and in waiting in mothering.
You know, I've found it to be a real common thread that I think will happen throughout all of life, which is the most important, the thing that will make me thrive is my private dialogue with God, my engagement with His Word. And in every stage of life, there are going to be measures of things not working. You know, on the outside, it can look like, wow, we have our six kids. And goodness, I've written a book. I've written two books. You know, my husband's running a business. Doesn't this look like success? But yet we all, you know, the older I get, the more I realize every one of us faces pain pretty much at every season.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like in this world, you will have trouble.
Yes.
That's a promise.
Yes.
We don't get to be exempt from that. But what I feel like was the invitation for me and my infertility has only grown, which is God saying, grow this secret life in me. Fall in love with me and my word. Cultivate this time when no one is looking. Come to me when you feel the ache of waiting and uncertainty. Yes, you can run to text a friend. Yes, you can post to social media and get a few strokes. Yes, you can go produce something. But the real fruit can happen in your heart when you run to me while you're waiting on the external fruit. So in the waiting in the children, and we feel this really. I mean, I've got children in their teenage years. Yikes. You know, there is a lot of waiting. And I feel like the same invitation that God gave me when I was at another baby shower watching a friend have baby number three. And we're still knocking around in this big house, just the two of us. You know, I feel like that invitation there is the same one now, which is fall in love with me, Sarah.
Yeah.
That you were made to fall in love with me. And you know what? While you wait on your 14-year-old to grasp in her heart truths that you've spoken to her, but you know she's just not there yet. You, Sarah, can have fruit in me. You can grow in me. You can fall more in love with me while you wait.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk to us about how you cultivate that dependence and that your first response is to run to the Lord, or you know, and cultivating that desire for Him and for the Word? How have you done that, especially in the midst of a busy, full life?
Yeah. Well, I think early on, I didn't have as much of a choice. For me, I feel like one of the biggest barriers is vulnerability with God, is being honest with God about our emotions. I think we can be we have the right answers, and we have answers in Scripture. And sometimes we just skip steps and want to jump to that rather than be okay with being messy in our emotions before God. And so early on, I felt like I didn't have a ton of friends who had walked through infertility, and I really felt alone and not a whole lot of companionship in dialogue, even with my husband. We were very connected, but it's different for a man than it is for a woman. And yeah. So for me early on, it was finding, wait, there is a place for me to take my emotions to God. I think the Psalms give that. The Psalms are like giving us lanes for our emotions with God, right? Like, and language. There's a place for me to take my emotions to God and not come away just a hot mess, but really come away changed because of who He is in His Word when I go there. And so I started to see, actually, it's kind of enjoyable to talk to God at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when I've just left a baby shower, or I've just left the fourth floor of Martha Jefferson Hospital with another friend holding their new baby. And it's actually the safest place for me to go talk to Him when I'd like to just pound on the steering wheel and scream.
Yeah.
And so now I feel like as a mom with six kids, my life feeling so full, I feel like I'm learning my soul and my heart a little bit to know when that child is melting again. And I have a whole lot of things I'd like to say to them. You know, it actually is the safest place for me to go, hey, I need 10 minutes to go sit in my room and go, God, this is really hard.
Yeah.
This is breaking my heart watching them here. What does Your Word have to say to me? What do You have to say to me right here? It's almost like I always say winning our lives back 1 minute at a time. Sometimes I think we need like 3 hours with God, you know, and that is glorious. But I also think there's something to waking up on a Thursday and going, Lord, I want to give 3 more minutes of my day to you. Mm-hmm. And tomorrow, maybe 3 more. And over a year's span, I've cultivated that pray without ceasing. I've gotten a little bit closer there, just 1 minute at a time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like how you talk about it over time, because I do think it's something in my life. It's been a very slow process of training myself of sometimes I will be thinking about something and worrying about something for 45 minutes before I even realize that's what I'm doing. And then training myself to, you know, go, what am I going to do next? Now that I've noticed I'm worrying about my child, what am I going to do? Am I going to try to come up with a solution, try to control that child, or am I going to turn to the Lord and say, Lord, I don't know what to do, but help me to walk forward by faith, trusting that you're going to show me how to respond to this situation, to this child?
Yeah, I think in a sense, it's almost like exercise, you know? I think, like, I'm a runner. I couldn't go out and train for a half marathon 5 miles at a time. Mm-hmm. You know, my kids had the flu. Our whole family had the flu for like 3 weeks. I mean, I literally am like, I think there are just black days on the calendar in January for us. So I didn't work out for like a month. Mm-hmm. And getting back into running, my first day back, I ran a half a mile, you know? Mm-hmm. And I feel like in some ways, having our minds be transformed, not conformed to the world, like Romans 12 talks about, but being transformed, it really is that like training, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's some of the beauty of age too, is the older we get, the more minutes we have under our belt of like thinking his thoughts and not just ours. Because you say 45 minutes. I mean, I feel like for years I was caught in hours and hours.
In days.
Mindless. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I do think that talking about the unseen moments, that's what those unseen moments are for. It's that time that God is cultivating that ability to turn toward him. That took me years, and I'm still because our children move into different phases of life and we face new challenges and new questions. And I think the unseen moments are where we have the opportunity to learn and grow and to actually practice faith. It happens there, don't you think?
Yeah. I do, you know, and I, one of the things I've been thinking about a lot recently is just the nature of our family, which is adoption. But not that that makes us unique. I think literally every single family has something that's an ache or a struggle or something that's unique for them. That's God given or God allowed. And so we have this in our home, and I can sometimes feel with friends like, oh, they would never understand this, you know, like, and I'm not even sure I want to tell them because I want to protect my kids' stories. Yeah. But, you know, even recently something happened where I just was bawling in my bed, talking to my husband saying, this is so hard. And I don't think I can even really share, I mean, with maybe my best friend, you know, but I can't really share this at large. And yet I feel like those places that feel so wrong, because we feel like, oh, nobody knows them. Nobody sees them. Like, how do I get to a place where someone can see and validate? They really are the invitation of God to say, I see every single minute of your day. Like even in that moment with this particular child, it was as if the Lord was saying, I know how this thing is acutely painful for you, Sarah, because of your wiring and your makeup and what you care about. And this feels so painful to you. And I'm the only one, because I formed you in your mother's womb when unseen by any human eyes, I'm the only one who knows how painful this is. And I'm the only one who can respond to this in a way that will allow you to actually grow here.
Hmm. That's really good. I think for me, sometimes it's hard though, for that to be enough for me. That I do, I know that to be true in my mind, but my heart wants validation and my heart wants someone to listen and to respond verbally to me. And, you know, and that's something God's challenged me on, is to ask me,
oh yeah,
am I enough? is it enough that I see you and that I understand? Yes. That is challenging for me.
I totally have felt that. I feel like, you know, seeking God in the unseen moments, if anything, have revealed so much about how I want to get validation from other people. I mean, it has been so telling for my heart to just expose deep down, man, I want someone to see me. I want someone to give me applause. I want someone to say, well done, even beyond the voice of God. And so what is that that's making me still look for some kind of approval in the flesh when the validation from him is truly, when I receive it, allow myself to receive it, it's the best thing. It settles me.
Yes, yes. Do you have something practical that you do in that moment when you recognize, okay, I know that God sees me, but I don't feel that that's enough in this moment. And I really want to turn to someone else. I want to go to my husband, or I want to text a friend. Do you have something practical that you tell yourself, or a truth that you remind yourself of?
That's good. Well, I mean, I think there's a couple of different things I do. Two that came to mind just as you're asking the question. One is, like, the very first thing I do is usually repent. Just, Lord, I'm sorry that I am turning to another human to tell me about myself rather than you. But then I think there's and it may even be just a 10-minute conversation with God. A lot of times for me, it's journaling, and I have the Psalms open, and I'm going, what part of me feels incomplete that I need to go run and tell a friend? Mm-hmm. You know, like it's almost like, God, teach me about my heart. What part of me is feeling so insecure right now? And I say so insecure, but the truth is, if we all kind of exposed the minutia of our thoughts throughout the day, there's a ton of insecurity in there. There's a ton of fear, you know? And so just almost asking God, teach me about my heart here. Why is it that for this particular thing, you know, one of the wrestles that I've had with going to 6 kids has been just the amount of output. And last spring, my toddler was kind of dropping his nap, and my baby was switching her sleep schedule. And so it just felt like every time I had planned to go for a run or to have alone time, it was thwarted. And I found myself, I just noticed that, like, in conversations with friends, I kept dropping, like, I'm not getting sleep. And I just these little, like, life is so hard. Like, can somebody pick up on this clue and ask me? You know, I just noticed that I was kind of like fishing all the time for someone to, like, just say, it must be really hard. Tell me more. And so I just, I was actually on a run one day. I just was praying and saying, God, what is this? Why do I keep trying to, like, hook my friends into understanding how hard this is? And it was like he exposed in that moment, deep down inside, this fear that I've had that he's going to give me more than I can handle. Mm. And so it's felt to me like I'm getting pushed over the cliff. 5 wasn't that, but 6, it just tapped into this old lie, this fear that God is going to give me. And the truth is, he always gives us more than we can handle, right? But I mean, like, this fear that there's going to be a day where I just fall off the cliff and Sarah never returns because she's been loaded down with too much, and that's the end of her life.
So
just being able to pray about that and say, this is a lie. Like, you, yes, maybe you have given me more than I can handle, but your grace is sufficient for me. Your strength is made perfect in my weakness.
Yeah.
So let me replace that truth from your word. Okay. 2 Corinthians, like, your power is made perfect in my weakness. With this, when I'm weak, it means it's the end of me, and I'm just gonna, you know, barely survive the rest of my life.
Yeah. It seems like what you're saying, what you're really encouraging us to do is, when we feel unseen, it's to get the eyes off of us and feeling unseen. And then, and instead to see God, to look for God, and where is he in this moment? Where is he in my day? As I'm parenting, as I'm homeschooling, as I'm doing all the things I'm doing, am I looking for him? Because he's there and he's active. But I think when I feel unseen and I kind of have that pity party, my eyes are turned toward myself. And instead, it helps me get my eyes off myself and put them on, okay, where's God? What's he doing?
Yes. Yeah. And it's exercising the muscle of looking up at God at random times of the day. I think we naturally can be wired to do that in the morning or at night. But what about at 3 o'clock in the afternoon? Or what about at 9:30 in the morning? You know, and I feel like the more that we go, oh, I don't have to wait for some big epiphany to start to look at God when something gets really hard or I feel unseen. But today, God, I just want to do it one more time while I'm folding laundry. You know, I think of a story. I'm carrying the laundry up the stairs to put away in my girls' room and noticing that it's the same laundry from like the day before, right? So I'm like, oh, that's how they're putting all their clothes away, you know, and that's how our water bill's so high. Like we're washing the same clothes every day. And I am mad, honestly, just frustrated and thinking like I have a college degree and they've duped me and I'm doing this again and no one sees this. And I can tell Nate when he comes home from work, but kind of a waste of breath, you know.
Yeah.
And in that moment, I had actually been adoring God from Psalm 139. Oh God, you search me and you know me. And so I'm walking up the stairs and the first few steps, it's like, I can't believe my kids are doing this. I'm fuming about the water bill. Then the next few steps, it's, but you know this moment, God, but you see me right now. And you might even be chuckling like this is, you see the expenditure that I'm giving to my children. And Nate doesn't even need to know this moment. And my kids don't even need to necessarily know. I mean, unless I choose to go talk to them about it, which I did, but like, they don't even need to know that this is hard for me, but you know, God. And so 3-4 steps up, I'm into Psalm 139. And you know what? That one day, that was 2 more minutes of my day that I was looking at him. So the next day, it was a little bit easier to do 2 more minutes. Mm-hmm. Feels like I'm a little bit closer to looking at him at the odd times.
Mm-hmm. That's really good. Well, I want to ask you 2 more things about parenting. One is discouragement, because I think it can be so easy to get discouraged. We've talked about that parenting takes means that we have to take the long view of waiting for God to do a work in our children that we pray for and we long for. But it's so easy to get discouraged and think, oh, nothing I'm doing really matters. This is not doing anything. How do you deal with discouragement in parenting?
I feel like in different seasons, it's been different strategies. Currently, what my husband and I have been doing, and he does this way more naturally, is just reminding each other of the ways that we've seen growth in our kids. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes discouragement can then lead to heavy-handed parenting.
That's right.
And can lead to negativity, right? Because we get discouraged and then we're like, let's fix this thing because I feel so frustrated with it. But if I have the long view in mind that, you know, we're on a 40-year trajectory plus, like not a 10-year trajectory, then I feel like I look a little bit closer at the specs of growth.
Yeah.
And so, you know, honestly, it's just been the two of us going back and forth and saying the ways that we're seeing growth and almost like developing an eye for where there is growth. Cause really in any terrible situation, right. And I'm not saying that my situation with my kids is terrible, but at a certain time of discouragement, it can feel terrible. God is still there and he is still moving. And sometimes I think it's a mere perspective shift to start to celebrate the ways that he is moving. And then we start to look for it a little bit more. And honestly, I feel like it affects my parenting. When I'm discouraged, if I let myself stay there, I end up sowing negativity into my kids and then they respond and it's just a cycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I respond with control. Like what you said, I got to jump in and fix that. And I've been, you know, I'll tell myself, oh, I've been a horrible mom that I haven't fixed this already. So I think we have different responses to that: fear, anger, control. And that's my next question is, you know, there are times where we do need to step in and God is pointing something out and we do need to take action and we do need to change something. And I don't mean change the child, but change what we're doing as a parent. How do you know the difference between I need to wait and I need to wait on the Lord to do something, or I need to step in and I need to make a change, or I need to take action in a certain way?
That's a great question. I think this goes back to the unseen moments, kind of cultivating the white space in our lives. I feel like the more that I build in pockets to sow into the unseen, whether it's being quiet in the laundry room and talking to God, or taking a walk at 3 o'clock in the afternoon around, we've got a nature preserve next to our house. That's a 30-minute walk just to breathe, to recite his word that's in my head for the day. You know, the more that I do that, the more I become a little bit more aware of the inner workings of my heart. And so when I'm in a moment and I'm facing something with a kid, if my heart is racing, if I feel like my chest is closing in, if I feel anger, it typically is not the Lord telling me I need to change this in this kid. But in that moment, if I feel, wow, an idea pops into my head kind of out of the blue and something resonates with me that goes, this is a deeper thing. And then I run it by Nate later and he's like, yeah, I've seen it. It just feels more measured, but I feel like I can be more measured when I'm cultivating more white space in my life where I'm not, where I've chosen to set down my phone and not search social media at a 10-minute break, but instead take a walk and pray the Psalms. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like that kind of white space enables me to look at the struggles in my parenting with a lot more perspective.
Mm-hmm. That is so true. So good. Okay. One final question I'm asking everyone that I'm talking to. How are you walking forward by faith? What is helping you do that?
I mean, I think I already talked about it, alluded to it with looking at the ways that God is moving in my kids when I'm discouraged. But I feel like in general in life, this year, especially bleeding over a little bit from last year, my faith is growing as I'm looking back at the testimonies of God in my life.
Yeah.
And so I have noticed that I can quickly gloss over something big that God has done and move into fear for the next thing. But I think one of the conscious ways that I've been fighting fear is going, no, no, no. I don't want to forget that he did this last thing and it was good. Here's a little example. We took a big trip for an anniversary in November of this past year, but my toddler was in a tough spot leading up to that trip. I mean, he's just a passionate kid. He's a strong-willed kid. And I was really facing a ton of fear going on the trip of what it was going to be like. And, you know, I know the nuances of his heart and it was a longer trip than we normally take. And it was incredible and he did wonderful. And the people who watched him were, it was so great. And we got back and Nate said to me, you know, that's about 3 months of your life where you were fighting fear before this incredible gift that God gave us. Well, here we are again, looking at another trip. We try and get away 3 times a year together, not for that length of time, but just for a weekend trip. And I find myself having those same feelings all over again. Like, oh, what's it going to be like? And leaving him, and my big kids are pretty self-sufficient and they know that we're going to come home. It's just different when you're in that stage where you don't know when mom and dad are coming home. And so I'm feeling that all over again and choosing instead of to go, oh, playing out all the scenarios going, nope, a couple months ago, God, you just did it. You gave us a beautiful trip away together and he was wonderful. And the people who took care of him, it went great. And okay, we can do this again. Like, I feel like that's some of how I'm moving forward in faith is looking back on what God has done and telling myself the stories again.
Mm, that's great. That's really great. Well, I appreciate your time so much, Sarah. The wisdom that you've shared with us, it's been helpful for me. I'm sitting here thinking about my children as you're talking, like, okay, yeah. I want to keep doing that and keep trusting the Lord with my children. It's really challenging because we care so much about them. But what you've shared is so helpful for us. So thank you.
Thank you, Christy.
I love how Sarah consistently turns her attention to God and to his word. In my own life, I often find myself turning toward other people and thinking, like Sarah mentioned, that if they just understood, I'd feel better. I mentioned in our conversation a proverb that changed that for me, and I wanted to share that with you since I couldn't remember it when we were talking. It's Proverbs 14:10, and it says, "The heart knows its own bitterness, and a stranger does not share its joy." Meaning, no one can fully know our struggles or our joys. Only God can fully know us and know those things about us, and we must turn toward him. I've learned I must look back and how God has been faithful, just like Sarah said, and then look forward through the promises of God for what he says he will do. And this helps me live by faith in the present. This is actually the theme of my new book, Searching for Spring, How God Makes All Things Beautiful in Time, which comes out March 6th. I wanted to explore the idea that Jesus redeemed all things, but at the same time we live in a broken place and with broken hearts. How do we live this life by faith? I have some beautiful gifts available for you when you pre-order the book before March 5th, which is very, very soon. So don't delay. Find out more about the book on my website, gracecoversme.com. Just look for Searching for Spring under the Books tab, or look for the link in the show notes below. Join me next week on By Faith as I chat with Sean Groves about God's faithfulness and his battle with depression. Until then, friends, have a great day and keep walking forward by faith.